On Before the Bestseller, we talk with our favorite authors about the books they wrote and the stories behind how those books made it big. I'm your host, Alex Straffy, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today.
Hey, listeners, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of the Before the Bestseller podcast. In this second episode with 12-week year author Michael Lunnington, we're chatting all about how his book has become extremely popular with hundreds of thousands of copies sold. This book's been around since 2013, but has incredible longevity, and you'll love hearing some of the unique aspects of how they went from a self-published 67-page book to a book that has been hugely successful and continues to transform the lives of individuals and teams everywhere. All right, everybody, welcome back to another great episode talking with Michael Lunnington of the 12-week year. And in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit more about something that I find really interesting, which is launching the books, marketing it, and continuing that longevity. So why don't we start there? Where did this idea for the book come from? How did you know that you wanted this to be part of a book?
That is a really good question. I'm surprised as I look back on it that we actually wrote the book. But I've been in consulting my whole life, and so has my business partner, Brian Moran. And where we started out working together. So I was part of Arthur Andersen. Arthur Andersen went belly up when they did the Enron accounting. I was part of a consulting group inside of Arthur Andersen, and Brian had been working with at another consulting firm with me, so we knew each other. He was kind of starting his own consulting firm at the time. So I left Arthur. I joined Brian, and we started kind of going out to clients, and we had this process that was pretty traditional consulting, where we'd go out and we really help them to try to identify ways to make their operations more efficient, more effective, and save money or make more money. But what we realized pretty quickly in that is that they already had a lot of great ideas. It wasn't as they were lacking ideas. What they lacked was a way to take those ideas and make them work, right? So that was our business problem we decided to solve, was that gap between what people knew to do and what they actually got done, right? Because we all have a lot of great ideas. Very few of those actually hit the road and happen. So that's what we focused on. And we started out by helping people get more of the right things done. And we created annualized plans with them and had quarterly goals and things like that. And what we found was, we couldn't really get their attention, except towards the end of the year, in the fourth quarter. Earlier in the year, they would work, but they wouldn't necessarily have that same focus and energy that we get at the end of the year. We were kind of frustrated by that. So we decided to address that issue by creating a shorter year timeframe. And we were introduced to a concept called periodization from one of our clients, which is an exercise discipline for sports. And anyway, we decided to take that concept, which was a short cycle of time on a given skill in sports, overloading on that skill, getting really good at it, and then moving to the next skill and the next skill in sequence. And we thought that's a really powerful idea of that focus for a short period of time. That's really kind of getting at what our problem is with clients. So we adapted it for business. And so we don't just stop doing other things and just practice on one thing, but we took that short time frame and that hyper focus and we built it into the 12-week year. But at the time, we called it periodization, which is where the training thing came from. And we found that periodization wasn't the best name.
Okay.
We don't know what the hell periodization was. And so we'd have to explain it. And by the time we were doing that, we did lost the interest. So we decided that we needed to kind of have a way of communicating the concept to other people. So we've been doing training. We've been doing all this stuff on it. And we had modules and things that we put together. And so we decided, why don't we just take all that stuff and let's condense it into a book that we can use as sort of an introduction to what we do. And so we wrote this book called Periodization. It was 63 pages long, I think. 63, 60 something like that. And we weren't sure how many we should print. And we decided, let's take a risk. Let's print 100. We figured we both have a box or two in our garage for a while. But we went to a trade show and we gave them all away. So we sold some of them. And we thought, that was interesting. I'm glad we did that, right? We self-published it. It was self-printed and everything. And I remember about maybe a month after we went to that trade show, I got an order. I got a call in and I got an order for more books. And we were smart enough to put an order for them in the back of the book. And I was like, wow. And I ran to Brian's office. Hey, we got an order. And we're all excited about that. And we kept getting these onesie, twosie orders. And finally, we got an order from New York Life for 500 books. It was like maybe 4 months later. And it's like, we just And then all of a sudden, all these bulk orders started coming in. We ended up selling over 250,000 copies of that book. I had to rename it though. But anyway, that's why we wrote the book. We wanted to write a book that led to people understanding what we did. And it turned into a book actually that people wanted to buy. And so we made a lot of money on the book. I didn't expect to. Self-published, you know, you get a lot of the profits yourself for that. But what was cool about that is that it really spread the word. And we really started getting large organizations calling us in to do consulting and training with them. And, you know, for 20 years, two decades, that was the bulk of our activity was companies would bring us in based upon that book. We had to rename it, though. We called it the 12-week year because nobody knew what periodization was. Somebody said they thought it was a gum disease. So we figured, you know, we probably need to rename it, so that we renamed it the 12-week year. And then Wiley picked this up later on, which is awesome.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's something a lot of self-published authors have questions about. When does it make sense? Does that ever really happen, that it kind of goes the reverse, that you're self-published and then a traditional publisher approaches you? Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Well, it wasn't quite that cool. What happened was, we had a buddy who had published a book with Wiley, and we asked to talk to his editor because we couldn't get anybody's attention. We'd say, you know, we've sold 200,000 copies of this book, 250,000 copies of this book, and we couldn't get anybody to sniff it. So we actually asked for an introduction, and we got the introduction, and we talked to Wiley, and I said, you know, good idea, but we're not going to publish that book because it's too small. It won't stand up on a shelf. It was only 67 pages long. And so we had to expand the book. So that's what we did. We expanded the book, and then Wiley gave us contract for it, and that's how it happened. But we had to chase. We talked to more than one publisher and couldn't get anybody interested until Wiley. And that was because we had an inside invite. But what was cool about that was that, you know, once we had that, we made less per book, but ultimately the book went New York Times bestseller, and then that's when things really, really took off. It was when our business really just boomed.
So before you went to that traditional route and you were self-publishing it, what would you say were the most effective things that you were doing for marketing? What really worked the best?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. I think we are an anomaly, because all we did ever to market that book was to print those first 100 copies and put an order form in the back. Mm. But the reason that the book took off was because it was a quick read. But it actually worked. When Brian and I wrote the book, we said, look, we can't just talk about an idea, because, you know, that's not who we are. We're about executions. And so if somebody reads this book, they should be able to take the book and apply it right now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was a 6-7 page book. You know, it took maybe you could read it in two sittings. And it was simple. It was just the bare bones of what it took to make the 12-week year work for you. And that's what took off. I mean, it was writing a book that created value for people. That was our focus, and it turned out that was what drove it. Now, that's not the story for most folks, though. We happen to also be in an industry where there's a lot of turnover. So we were in financial services at the time, and that was our core focus as a target industry. And because they have so much turnover, they're always having new people coming in, because the 12-week year was such a quick read, and it was so lined up with people being successful in business that, you know, it just was a natural fit. And then that industry also shares ideas. So these companies were talking to each other. And that's when we started getting orders, New York Life, Mass Mutual, mm-hmm. The Guardian. I mean, it was everywhere. And we ended up having big contracts with most of those companies.
Mm-hmm. And that is all so fascinating. And I know that there are aspects of that definitely may be an anomaly, but I also think that there's some really good learning nuggets in there for other authors who are listening to this episode, because even the idea of putting something in the back of your book that was an order form, that's still advice that we give to authors today. We actually say, try to put things like asking people for a review or a list of your other books at the front of your book, so you hit them with that right away. But just this idea of this word of mouth can also be really powerful. And I think sometimes when people think about writing a book, they think they've got to put like everything, all the knowledge they've accumulated in it, and then it may not have as much practical application because people get overwhelmed or aren't sure where to start first. So sometimes it can be an idea that doesn't need to take 300 pages to be explained, but it's highly, highly useful just for somebody to read that shorter thing. So that's good for other authors to keep in mind. Did either you or your co-author think about marketing differently after you were partnered with Wiley for the publication of the book?
Yeah, we We were B2C. So B2B. So what that meant was we had a long selling cycle. And we had big projects that would last for several years and then they would go away. But we were a small firm. We decided intentionally to stay a small firm. It was basically just Brian and I and a team behind us, but it was just us. And we go out and do all the trainings. We do all the things that we did. And so what that meant was it was feast or famine. It was up mm-hmm. and down. And so we really wanted to move away from that. And so when we did the move away from that, we went to more of a B2C model. That's when we started to market, but we didn't know the first thing about marketing. We knew how to sell. I mean, that's what we did. We sold to big companies. Selling and marketing are so different, and we didn't really understand marketing at all. Mm-hmm. And we had several years where we really bumped along trying to move and transition from, you know, the big companies to just everybody. Cause we get stories, people reading the book and they'd save a marriage or, you know, they we have some, one person told us they got out of a homeless shelter. They found our book and they read the book and got out and, you know, in, I don't know how many months, 3 months, 6 months, they had $30,000 in the bank. And so, you know, those kind of stories were happening and we knew it had application at the individual level, but we just didn't know what to do with that. So we couldn't market. We weren't very good at it, to be honest. We are now working with a great marketer, but it took us a while to find him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can you talk a little bit about that? How do you decide what things you want to be responsible for in marketing your book versus what things did you and your co-author say, you know what, we need to find the expert who's going to handle this particular thing. How did you make those decisions?
Well, that's a good question. One thing I will say, and I didn't add before, is that in the first book, we put an order form. In the second book, we put a bunch of QR codes so mm-hmm. that people could read the book and then go right to our website. And you know that was back before much of this was going on. And we built a house list of about 120,000 people. And so what we were able to do, even lamely, like Brian and I were doing in the beginning when our marketing was pretty lame, would be able to get some activity. Mm-hmm. But when we brought the marketer in, he was really, really good at helping us to, you know, explain what we did more clearly and mm-hmm. and to kind of create this compelling reason why you wanted to pick up the book and not only pick up the book because most of the people listed already had it, but to get this free course and kind of start getting engaged with us. So we've really begun to transition over the last 2 years to a B2C company, which is working now. And I didn't quite answer your question. I got a little bit carried away with the story of the codes, but I think building that list really helped us, even though we mm-hmm. didn't know how to use it in the beginning. It's really helped us.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good example of seeing in action what other things you're doing that go beyond the book that are contributing back to kind of the whole funnel or the bigger business picture that you have.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is so great about your book is the long shelf life that it has. I mean, and that can sometimes be a challenge for authors who've had books out for several years. Do you have any insight or tips into how you've been able to maintain that longevity, keeping this in the conversation, keeping this a valuable tool, making sure that people are discovering it who are totally new to you and to the idea itself?
Yeah, so it's not really gimmicky. Mm-hmm. It may sound like at the 12-week year, I mean, it sounds like it's a gimmicky title, but it's not because it's really the way that people get the results for the book is looking at time differently. Mm-hmm. So I think that...
So the book has been out now for more than a decade. Oh, yeah. This is a challenge for authors to keep their book relevant, to keep it in the conversation, to be introducing it to a whole new audience. Do you have any tips or insight into how you've been able to do that?
Yeah, great question. I got off on a different tangent. But so the fact that it's been around for 10 years has been a blessing to us. We had a problem that we solved that's a problem that just is evergreen, because the problem is this kind of annualized thinking that people have, and it doesn't work. You know, it works for a little while, but it doesn't work very well across the whole year. So the problem is a chronic problem. And so every year, it's weird that annualized thinking is what feeds us, though, because people think at the beginning of the year that they need some way to make this next year different. And they got goals. I'm going to be different this year. And our book is ideally tuned to help you set and hit goals. So it really plays off that annualized thinking. So that's really why I think it continues to sell. Our best selling months are between November and February of every year, because people are kind of either they got to hit their annual goals at the end of the year or they're looking to start a new year. And that's really what drives us, is that problem is evergreen.
Mm-hmm. And on that note of like, picking an evergreen topic and then just having a good concept that works for people. Over time, you've obviously seen some changes in the publishing world. What's been the biggest change that you've noticed in marketing a book in 2024 versus like 2013? What's been the biggest change for you?
Well, you know, for us, the biggest change is kind of arises from the organization that we were in, because we were already working with big companies. And so in the beginning, we had two companies in particular order 30,000 copies of our book. So it was like we were just, you know, right now. And so then as we moved to the B2C model, people have no problem spending money on a book. If it's a good book, they'll spend money on it. And the word of mouth that's been carrying on since then has really helped us to sustain those sales. And I think that the approach that we've had now, moving more towards the individual, has really kind of created more interest in our book. It's a 10-year-old book, and in December we were in Amazon's top 100 books. We didn't do any more advertising. We're not trying to push the book per se. But we're advertising in the marketplace for our products, and so people see those ads, and they go and look for the book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. And my last question for you is there anything you've tried with marketing the book that was just a flop? Like anything that you were like, wow, I wouldn't do that again if I had to market the book?
That's a good question. If we were better marketers, I'd probably have lots of stories about that. I think one of the things that we had a really good marketer. He was actually part of our team. I really thought he was a great marketer. But because he was a part of our team and reported to Brian and I, mm-hmm. We thought we were smart because we wrote the book, and we were always trying to tweak what he was doing. Mm-hmm. But what we found was when we went outside and we got a marketer who we were you know, paying a contract price for, mm-hmm. We listened a lot better. And so, I just say that listening to the people that understand marketing is such a vitally important thing to do, to trust them, to not try to tweak it and adjust it and make it, you know, marketing has a skill set and a talent set that isn't what typically an author has. And some are really good at this, but we weren't. But just getting a trusted advisor around marketing was the biggest thing we ever did, because they have been able to help us see the opportunities in the evergreen book, right? We'd sell the book and we'd sell big projects, but it was really difficult to transition to this B2C piece. And that's where the marketing was so helpful. The external marketer, because when you're paying for somebody's advice per hour, you pay more attention to them. You know, I mean, you pay employees that way too, but it's a salary, right? You know, when you're paying a lot of money, you pay more attention.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent piece of advice, because it can sometimes be challenging to hear people suggest that you do things with marketing that maybe you're not familiar with or you're not 100% convinced will work on your book. And so having somebody in-house that you kind of have this other relationship with for other projects or the rest of the scope of their job, that can make it a little bit challenging. But it's even when you bring in that outside person, you're still going to have to be willing to listen to them, to take their own expertise, especially if they've worked on other book marketing projects before. It's really helpful to know, okay, they're recommending this to me because they think it's really going to work. So we're not just throwing spaghetti at the wall here or trying all the things. So finding the right person to help can be instrumental. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your insight about this great book. Everyone should go check it out and read it. And if you haven't already, it will change the way you think about how you do your work and how you break down your project. So I really appreciate your time, and thanks so much for being here.
And no problem at all. My dog just decided to make an appearance. Sorry, but I could probably hear the whining, but yeah, no problem. I really enjoyed it. And it was a lot of fun. So, and there he is.
Thank you for listening. I know there's many other things you could have been doing during this time, and I hope you found this episode incredibly useful for you and your journey. And if you did, or if you have any feedback, I would love to hear that in a review on Apple. That would be fantastic, or anywhere else that you are listening to this show. So thank you. And if you're the type of listener that is also an author or looking to be an author soon, feel free to email me at alex@advancedamazonads.com. That's alex@advancedamazonads.com. And I'll add you to our weekly newsletter, where I send out all of the best marketing tips I've ever heard from authors that I've had on this show and many of the authors that we work with. So I look forward to hearing from you if that's something you'd find useful. And Either way, I look forward to having you back for our next episode.